This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, December the 11th. I'm Angela Denning. The U.S. Forest Service says the Rembo Island is trashed with abandoned cars. The Wrangell Ranger District hopes to clean up the island with the help of the city and the local tribe. KSTK's June Leffler has more from Wrangell.
So Rembo Island attracts Wrangell residents for camping and hunting. There's a sizable deer population and plenty of road to explore. So folks barge over cars and ATVs to the island to hit the roads. There are 33 active registered vehicles on the island. But last week, staff counted 73 vehicles near Roosevelt Harbor. Austin O'Brien with the Forest Service says many of these cars are littering the island.
See, some of them haven't moved in years. They have, you know, vegetation growing out of them or are completely blocked in.
He says the parking space in Roosevelt is not meant to be a dumping site for abandoned vehicles. These cars are unsightly. They interfere with brushing and other maintenance, and they take up parking space from people who actually need it.
Like that one over there, for instance, it hasn't moved in years, and it's not going to move on its own. So,
plus, it could become an environmental hazard.
Mostly because of the liquids that are in the vehicles. The batteries that are here, some are broken, some are not.
Chris Hatton is with the IGAP department of the local tribe. Her work is funded by the Environmental Protection Agency.
And so you'd have to do, really, some testing to find out if the soil is contaminated or not, because we don't know until we test any site whether there's any contamination or any worries.
These environmental concerns are more apparent than ever since the state had to ship tons of lead-contaminated soil off Wrangell Island. The contaminated soil came from an old car junkyard, and the state allocated almost $20 million to clean it up. The Forest Service wants to notify delinquent car owners and impound vehicles when needed. The Forest Service hopes to partner with the city and local tribe to actually get cars off the island. Maybe the Forest Service and the city could share the cost of bringing a scrap barge to town. Maybe the tribe could help mitigate any environmental hazards the cars could be causing. The city and tribe have not said what resources they're willing to put into this project, but both are drafting letters outlining their intent. In Wrangell, I'm June Leffler.
The blob could be back, or maybe it's the son of the blob. Either way, the warm water phenomenon, first discovered in the North Pacific 5 years ago, is slowly reemerging in the Gulf of Alaska. Although it doesn't appear to be as strong as the original, it could still affect weather and fisheries in southeast Alaska. Matt Miller has this report from Juneau.
Nick Bond is the Washington State climatologist who coined the name, the blob, when he discovered the original patch of warm water emerging in late 2013.
For the Gulf of Alaska, I would say it's mostly, if not entirely, new. It might be a little bit of a different story for the Bering Sea.
Bond says Gulf of Alaska weather was unusually quiet this past summer.
Without the winds to draw heat out of the ocean and to mix up colder water from below, the near-surface waters again got quite a bit warmer than normal.
Currently, the water in the Gulf is about 4 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than normal. That isn't as hot or doesn't extend quite as deep as the original blob, at least not yet.
A caution to add, this isn't the new normal, but still it's kind of alarming that we're talking about this sort of thing again so soon.
Rick Tolman, a Fairbanks-based climatologist, expects these blob-like conditions, in combination with the current El Nino event in the equatorial Pacific, will shift the jet stream and North Pacific storm track to the east. That means mild conditions, less freezing, and more rain instead of snow, especially in southeast Alaska, which he says is
much more sensitive. So we can go wrong by a lot more for southeast in these situations than, say, the western Gulf of Alaska.
Southeast Alaska is already experiencing warmer than normal conditions again. November was 5 degrees above normal in Juneau. Unusually warm ocean conditions likely caused previous shifts in pollock spawn timing and extended the range of salmon into northwest Alaska. So what could this mean for the children and grandchildren of the original blob salmon?
I think at this point, I would just say it's largely uncertain what effects this is going to have.
That's Andy Piston with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He says they're already forecasting a weak run of pink salmon returning to southeast Alaska next season. Piston says warmer water usually means less fatty zooplankton, a common food source for juvenile salmon. Fewer calories means slower metabolism, slower growth, and reduced chances of surviving at sea. Even if they do survive out on the open ocean, salmon may return smaller and lighter. But Piston says the original blob did not have a uniform effect on pink salmon runs.
You see a wide variety. Some stocks did outstanding, and some stocks right next door did very poorly. A lot did average. So part of the problem is we don't know exactly where in the ocean individual stocks are going for the most part, and it's really hard to tease out why the survival rates are so different between, in some cases, stock groups that are adjacent to one another.
Pink salmon make up only a quarter of the value of Alaska's total catch, even though they are half of the volume. In southeast Alaska, pink salmon are the bread and butter of the seine fleet, averaging $112 million for fishermen at the docks. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Petersburg School Board will be voting on a bid award for the renovation of the district's food services at a meeting tonight. The district administration is asking the school board to accept the bid from J. Brandt General Contractors. The Homer-based contractor put in a bid for just over $1.5 million. The project will renovate the kitchen facility at the elementary school and finish up a catering kitchen at the high school. The school district will still need the board to approve $300,000 from allocated capital funds to the renovation project. Administrators thought they had state funding for the project secured 6 years ago, but that was pulled along with money for other state capital projects during the state's fiscal crisis. So the district on its own started up a renovation of the new Viking Cafe for middle and high school students. Then last December, the district received word that the state money was coming through at the amount of just under $1 million. Now the district plans to add over $500,000 to that grant to complete the whole renovation project. The food service renovation could start before the end of the school year, but most of the work is expected to happen in the summer. The school board jump-started the discussion on the project bid at a work session meeting yesterday. They also discussed vehicle replacement, and they heard an audit presentation from the district's accounting firm. Tonight, the board will be voting on approving the fiscal year 2018 audit. The board will also be voting to approve sex education requirements according to state law. The law requires that the instructors and curriculum are approved. They will be presented by middle and high school principal Rick Dormer. The school board will also be considering a 3-year contract for Superintendent Erica Kluepainter for 2019 through 2022. Her salary would be $130,000 the first year and bump up to $135,000 the next 2 years. The school board meets tonight at 6 p.m. in the middle and high school library. KFSK will be broadcasting the meeting live. Also, stay with us here on KFSK. We will be having Campus Connection coming up. That's a call-in show with school board officials, and that'll air at about 12:30 today following the midday news. Petersburg High School's wrestling team had 4 region champions at the regional tournament in Juneau this last weekend. Mount Edgecombe took first among Southeast teams for both the boys and girls. Petersburg's girls took third, while the Viking boys team was fifth. Jolyn Toyamura was first at 119 pounds, and Ruby Masson was first at 125 pounds. For the boys, Caden Geelan was first at 135, and Cole Spurl was first at 160. Corin Spurl took second place at 171, and Reed Anderson was second at 125 pounds. In total, 8 of the 12 Viking wrestlers have qualified for the state tournament. Joe Vicknicki spoke with Coach Dan Van Swearingen about the regional tournament.
Let's talk about Juneau and the regional tournament. You guys ended up having, I think, 7 wrestlers qualify for state.
That's right. So we had 7 that qualified, but actually today we got word that Adam Ware at 160 also qualified. He was an at-large bid because he was the next best qualifier. So we're actually taking 8 out of 12, which is really pretty good.
Great. Some you expected, probably some that you didn't, I imagine.
Yep. Yeah. So just the other day, I was talking to Mr. Cabral, and I asked, kind of told him, I think we're going to take 6. And then when we came back with 8, you know, it's a little bit unexpected. But the ones that were taken, I think, deserve to be there. So they wrestled really well this last weekend.
Any matches that stick out in your mind?
Oh, yeah. Well, Jolyn Toyamura wrestled really well. she's been out. She was injured for the past month or so, and she just got cleared for the region tournament the day before we left, and we were, you know, kind of, I guess we'll see how it goes. And she came out and she beat a girl from Ketchikan in the first round, and then in the finals match she beat a girl from Mount Edgecombe that had beat her like six or seven times this year. So very unexpected, and it was 5-0, so she blanked her. It was really pretty cool. That was great. Ruby Masson dominated. She pinned everybody in the first round, I think, and so it was really fun to watch. But Corin Spurrell had a really tough match at 171 in the finals, but he was going against a kid from Craig. He'd wrestle all year long, and we were kind of taking it one round at a time. And at the end of the first round, it was 0-0, perfect, right where we want it. At the end of the second round, it was, I think, 2-0. So really close. That was the closest it's been all year, and it didn't end up going our way. But he wrestled a really tough match, and so he ended up taking second. But it was just a great weekend all around. And we even had some other guys that aren't going to state wrestle really well, like Noah File. Had a couple of big wins for us, and he, you know, we bumped him up a couple of weight classes. So it was good wrestling from us. So
your
a lot
team
of fun.
Must be peaking at the right time then.
Yeah. Well, and it does help when we take everybody on the team along, and but it seems like the kids are feeling pretty healthy and feeling strong. We're in pretty good shape, and so I think this is exactly right. This is the time of year we want to peak. So feeling pretty good. Yeah.
Right, so you head up to Anchorage pretty soon, this week, right?
Yeah, we leave on Wednesday this week, and we're flying up to Anchorage. The state tournament starts Friday morning, and it goes all day Friday, all day Saturday. Should be pretty exciting. They wrestle through the semifinals on Friday night, so if we have someone make it to the state finals, it's kind of nice. They just got to weigh in the morning, and then they get a break until about 6 o'clock in the afternoon. They go home and sleep, and it's a great experience because it's the 1, 2, 3, and 4A boys, and then all the girls all in the Alaska Airlines Center, and so there's great wrestling all day, every day, and it's really exciting. So, yeah, pretty fun.
Do you know your seedings yet or anything, or is that not until later in the week?
Well, the seedings will come out, I think, on Tuesday. I assume we will get a third seed for Cole Spurrell, since he took third at the ACS meet, but that's kind of up in the air. I would not be surprised if we got the third for him, and I think Ruby Masson will get a seed. Not sure where, because she hasn't wrestled anybody up north, but she deserves a seed. I think if she doesn't get seeded, someone's going to be upset, because last year she almost beat the number two girl, and she was a freshman. This year, that, you know, she deserves a seed, so I'm hoping she gets a two or a three, and we'll see how it goes from there. But you never know. Sometimes you get good seeds, sometimes you don't, and sometimes you draw bad matches in the first round. No luck drawing the number one seed right off the bat. So
seeding doesn't mean much, because you still got to get out there and win. So.
Yeah, it's exactly right. If you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. And so regardless of what seed you get or if you don't get seeded, if you win every match, you're going to be a state champ.
The state tournament is this weekend in Anchorage. An independent investigation into the Ketchikan School District's actions related to reports of sexual assault and sexual harassment is done. The Ketchikan School Board met in executive session last week to hear the full report, but details are not being made public. Some information from the report will be revealed, says Board President Matt Eisenhower, but the Ketchikan Board wants to be careful to not interfere with criminal proceedings against former high school teacher Doug Edwards. Edwards retired last spring and was arrested just days after the last day of school. He's charged with multiple counts of sexual abuse of a minor. Prosecutors allege he sexually assaulted a 14-year-old girl at the high school, in his home, and in the church where he was a pastor. The board decided to move forward with an investigation this summer following a personnel complaint against Superintendent Robert Boyle. Details from the complaint were not revealed, other than it was related to the Edwards case. Eisenhower says this week's executive session allowed board members to hear the full report and ask any questions.
Following Tuesday's meeting, the school board would have about a week to review the full report in writing, and then we have time on the agenda at our next school board meeting coming up on the 12th to take up the issue and have some time to discuss further action if warranted.
That discussion also will be in executive session, although any action the board takes must happen in public by law. Eisenhower says while he can't talk about the content of the report, he can say that the board was pleased with its detail.
There were over 35 people interviewed. Those are students, past students, staff, past staff, as well as community members. So she did a thorough job over the course of 6 different days. Some of the interviews had to be done telephonically, but most of them were done in person.
Eisenhower says the Ketchikan District plans to provide an executive summary of the report for the public by the end of this month. More information could be released when the criminal case has been resolved. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.